Welcome to Two Tipsy Plants, where we talk plants and drink booze. My name is Sasha.
And my name is Sasha.
And today's episode will be dedicated to several topics. We decided to be a bit more open to, with the format today. Would be interested in MPI lists and how does it all influence the prices for the plant?
Yep, sounds good to me. How about we start with the most important thing? Which is drinks.
So, today we are having Church Road, Hawke's Bay, Merlot Cabernet Sauvignon 2019.
Well, Sasha is having a wine. I've decided that I don't feel like drinking wine today, so I am actually having a Zephyr Cider, which is a apple crumble infused cider from Hawke's Bay as well.
The reason why we are drinking Hawke's Bay exclusively today is because the Hawke's Bay has, well, not just Hawke's Bay, but North Island itself has been hit by Hurricane Gabriel. And it was just a tragic, and people lost their houses, people have lost their jobs.
Well, a lot of farmland and grape vineyards gone.
Vineyards has gone underwater or just got washed out by the sediment. A lot of stuff happened. So, if you are thinking about having a wine, just support the small businesses of New Zealand and have a bottle of Hawke's Bay. Or if you're thinking about cider, choose the Hawke's Bay cider.
Hmm.
Moving on. Today, we are having Merlot Cabernet Sauvignon. Once again, I'm just reminding. And the flavor profile should be black cherries, black currants, cedar, baking spices, and graphite.
Graphite.
Let's check.
I'm just trying to think what would a graphite taste in wine.
Well, you know what? I was wondering what graphite tastes in wine at some point as well. And you should be definitely the person who knows how graphite smells like and tastes like because you used to draw with it.
I used to actually have a bit of it to bring your temperature up so you don't go to school. But please, kids, don't do that. That's not good for you.
I hope kids are actually not listening to our podcast.
Yeah. Right. But, yeah. So do you taste the graphite in your wine?
I don't think it... I'll get back to you. Let me savor it first.
Fair enough. I definitely taste apple crumble in mine, which is lovely. I do like it.
It definitely smells like a bit of a baking spice and cedar and...
Baking spice. I thought you said bacon spice.
No, not bacon spice. But yes, it's very, like, smells very sweet.
Nice. All right. So what do you think...
Oh, yum. Oh.
Do you want to talk about biosecurity and what biosecurity is in New Zealand?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So biosecurity in New Zealand has three approaches. First approach is a risk-based approach, which means that New Zealand, the biosecurity system in New Zealand is based on risk management. So they try to see how the introduced species will affect the current ecosystem and if it's going to be like invasive or will bring some kind of diseases or destabilize the ecosystem, essentially. There is a collaborative approach over there. Which is collaboration between the government agencies, industry groups, and the public to manage the biosecurity risk, because it can't be just government who is responsible for that.
Well, yeah.
Because let's be honest, a lot of people just literally bring it, like, illegally.
Yeah. Well, so just for those people who have never been to New Zealand or have never traveled to New Zealand, when you arrive to New Zealand via air, via plane, you will be asked to fill in a declaration form, a biosecurity declaration form, where you have to declare if you have any plant material on you or any fruit or anything that is plant or fish, I think, as well.
Plant, fish, even honey, you can't bring it.
Yeah, and also like animal products. Even you can't even have dirty boots when you come to New Zealand. Your boots have to be clean because obviously the dirt on your boots can have microbes and seeds stuck to it that could destabilize New Zealand.
Definitely. Let's just pause that discussion about the biosecurity and go into the case study that I have seen and heard about when I was back in university from one of the country that has the biggest production of a lot of stuff, biggest population, and on the eastern side of the globe.
Yeah.
They have transported, I think it was the apple blossoms pollen, because there is some kind of, I can't remember, honestly, it's been 4 years ago, but it was apple blossom pollen.
Was that to help pollinate the trees that are already in the country to sort of...
to produce a nice fruit, essentially. But they were supposed to bring in artificial pollen. Apparently that's a thing.
Okay, did not know that.
But what happened was it was infected. So a lot of orchards got destroyed because of that, because it was infected with virus. Because if it's artificial pollen, you don't even have to check it. Because there is no way you have some kind of bacterial or viral infection. At least that's what I'm remembering from that. And yeah, a lot of people in north part of South Island lost their orchards. A lot of families got bankrupt, and it was a very devastating experience. And somebody's small mistake resulted in a whole destabilization of the life. And the last approach is a science-based decision-making. Again, it's similar to the collaborative approach and the risk-based approach. Just don't be an idiot and don't import something that is going to destabilize the ecosystem.
Yeah, well, it's, I guess New Zealand is making a good effort to actually educate people about it. Because, you know, when you are on the plane as well, they show you a little video that shows how beautiful New Zealand is, and the fact that something that is brought from overseas without being approved can destabilize ecosystems. So I guess if you are educated, that's good. But a lot of people who come to New Zealand,
they just get annoyed about it.
Well, firstly, they get annoyed about it. They get annoyed about the fact that they can't bring their own banana that they've received on the plane, which is, I think, is just stupid. But a lot of people are not educated about it. So the more... I'm a strong believer in education. Like, if you actually want something to work, you have to educate people about it. So I think New Zealand is doing a good job, but I feel like there is room for improvement.
There is always room for improvement. And also need to be mindful that you can't cover all the bases. You can't deliver information to everybody, and not everybody will be agreeing with that.
Yeah. So, as we mentioned, biosecurity in New Zealand is pretty strict. Hence the next topic, which is the MPI, Ministry of
MPI
Primary
list,
Industries.
Industry. Essentially, what MPI list is, it is a list that allows you to import the plants. Sorry, I'll rephrase it. It is the list which shows you which plants are allowed to be imported into the country.
Is it just plants, or does it include like animals?
I was exploring only the plants side, but I think I have seen the crops, I have seen the plant cuttings and just plant material, and there was animal stuff as well. So basically how the MPI list, I thought how it worked. If you have the name of the plant on the list, you're not allowed to have it within the country, and you essentially need to destroy it straight away. What it actually does, it does not allow you to import the plants even if they're already within the country. Again, going back and circling back into the biosecurity to prevent the new viruses, new bacteria coming into the country, because they might not present within the plants for a long time until they are mature. And the best, well, the most common way to transport plants these days is either seeds or seedlings. Viruses or bacterial infections will not always show up at that stage.
Yeah. So the reason we are talking about this is recently, was it a couple of weeks ago that we saw that article on stuff? There was an article about 12 new houseplants that have been added to the MPI list.
And honestly, those houseplants were literally the houseplants that we already have in our house. And they just made me laugh. But because I didn't understand that MPI list is something that you are... It's not that you're not allowed to have it within the country. It is that you're not allowed to transport it into the country. So if you have it in the country, sure. If it's allowed to, you can propagate it, you can grow it from seeds, if it was from within the country. but you can't import it into the country.
Yeah, I saw the list as well, and I was like, hang on, we've actually, we have discussed a couple of plants in our previous episodes as well. And I was questioning it as well, like, don't we already have those plants in New Zealand? But then I guess when the plant is overseas, there are certain diseases that could be found on those plants, where if it's grown in New Zealand, those diseases are either eradicated or, you know,
not introduced yet.
Yeah, or not introduced yet. Yeah, they're not present on that plant. So if you propagate it within the country, that's okay. But if you bring it in, it might have the disease or a pest in it. Okay.
A good example is the mosaic virus. Very popular virus for any of your philodendrons, any of your aroids, essentially. Philodendrons, monsteras, and your anthuriums and syngoniums.
What does a mosaic virus do?
Well, people think when they see it, sometimes they think it's variegation, but it's not.
Oh, that's dangerous. Can you imagine someone, because I know that variegated plants are more, indoor
like,
plants.
It's not like white. It's more minty color. So it will present itself like Monstera type constellation, for example, but it was found on Rifida forata tetrasperma. That was a great example a couple of years ago, which for common name, it will be a mini Monstera.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why it's not a great thing. And it's very easily transferable if you cut your plants and like for cuttings and you use the same scissors without sterilizing them for another plant. That's it. Your other plant has mosaic virus. And as far as I remember, the symptoms, like besides the discoloration, it ends up just melting your plants.
Okay. Can you imagine someone selling you a plant saying that, because variegated plants are more expensive than non-variegated ones, being like, oh, it's a new variegation, and you get it, and it's actually the mosaic disease.
I mean,
disease
people who know, they know. And
well, I didn't know about it.
Plus, I don't think that people that do not know would go for a plant for like thousands of dollars if they don't know what they're getting. Like, you would definitely educate yourself before doing a purchase of that magnitude.
Yeah.
Hopefully, at least. So, yeah. What MPI list essentially does, what is interesting for me is because the way MPI list have affected the prices on the plants in the past 3 years.
Yeah, and let's sort of start from the beginning, I guess. I think I actually thought about it in depth as well, not just the fact that MPI list affects the plant prices, but also the fact that, firstly, houseplants are now back in fashion. You have so many of them. And my theory is, we will add MPI on top of it, but other factors kind of do affect the price as well. So I was thinking about it. That includes both outdoor and indoor plants. Firstly, we had COVID, right? So
yes.
Nobody could travel and people started building. You know how the building industry just construction
boomed.
It just
started going down.
Yeah, it was slowing down a bit, yeah. So people started building more. People started investing more money into their gardens, the new gardens and the existing gardens. So same with houseplants. Like, you started having more houses. And
landscaping.
Obviously, people love houseplants. And they're in fashion now, so people started buying more.
I would think it's more because during the COVID time, people could not get out of the house. And they needed a hobby. And they wanted to be a bit more in, like, a bit more outdoors while being indoors.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point too.
So what happened? They just started, like, people literally went crazy with plants. Like, I remember there. I've been there. I was one of them.
Yeah, you were one of those people who was queuing outside of garden center before 8 a.m.
Yes. And damn, like, honestly, the supermarkets or like garden centers or online shops, everything was running out of stock on a weekly basis.
And you also see more supermarkets with houseplants now.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is another effect of that.
Yeah. So that adds on top of that as well. But going back to prices, what started happening is the demand was more than what the nurseries could produce.
Yeah, demand and supply problem.
Yeah, so the prices started going up. That was one factor. The other factor was the fact that in the past couple of years, minimum wage went up quite a bit. And obviously, when you get minimum wage going up, you do get prices going up as well. I hope that people do understand that too. So And then on top of that, you get the MPI list, which controls the plants that you can import. So I'm assuming, so let's say, give me a name of the plant.
Let's take an example of Calathea arbifolia, that one that you have already in your house, just humongous leaves. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a beach to grow, though, for me. I can't. But the thing is...
Is it on the list?
It is on a list now. Just introduced it.
Oh, so it's among those 12 plants that have been just...
It is among those 12 plants.
Okay. So I'm assuming that only a few nurseries had them before. So it was kind of exclusive to certain nurseries. And then maybe now that it's other nurseries and other people are allowed to bring it in, it will just sort of create more of those plants in the country, so the prices should go down? Is that the logic behind it?
I would say so, just because it just increases your supply chain. Like, you don't have that stress on a nursery to just grow that particular plant, for example. Mm. The nurseries, the local nurseries, can diversify now and use something else if they want to. It will be cheaper to import the plants from, for example, Thailand or Malaysia or Indonesia, like Calatheas or anything aroid, and that's it. That's going to be easier. It will be cheaper, hopefully.
Yeah. I was quite excited to see a plumeria on the list. It's not...
I know. That's the only one that I was not aware of that is already in New Zealand.
I think it is, because I have a feeling that I've seen it here before. But don't quote me on that. We will try to include the link of the article that we're talking about into our Reddit chat.
And I will try to post it as well on Instagram, just to cover our bases. And
yeah.
So anybody can...
Yeah, if you're interested to read it for yourself, yes.
Yeah. And another thing that I wanted to cover today was the prices and how crazy it was during the COVID. Just like, not just because of MPI, but just because people discovered a new passion for themselves and they were trying to find something that is not available in the stores just yet. Rosie
is licking my foot.
Rosie, get out of here, please.
Sasha has this... massive dog. She's a big dog. She's a sweetie, but she's massive.
She has a killer tail.
She's just destroying everything with her tail right now. Rosie, go back to your bed, please. She's a lovely girl, but I don't think she knows that she's big.
No, she thinks that she's a lap dog.
How are your plants surviving with her killer tail?
Well, take a look at my fiddly figure and nothing else to tell.
Yeah, it's a bit roughened.
It's a bit different.
Yep, you can definitely see where Rosie's tail smacked it a couple of times. Mm-hmm.
So, what I have done, like going back into discussion about the plant prices and people just being into their new hobbies and trying to find something rare.
Collect them all.
Collector plants. Oh my gosh, it was such a big hype like a couple of years ago just to find something that nobody else has. And it was just a very lucrative market as well. It will probably circle back into the biosecurity as well. So people would just find something that is not present or common just yet that you can't find in your box stores. And yeah, the best example so far is 2020 string of turtles. It was for one leaf cutting, you could charge $200.
And there you have it, just on your windowsill.
And now I have it on my windowsill, and I understand now that it was bullshit to charge that kind of money for that plant, even though it was rare, even though, yes, it is beautiful, but it grows like a weed. It is the same family as Peperomia.
I'm assuming it's quite easy to propagate as well.
It is extremely easy to propagate as well, yeah. You just drop it on your soil, on potting mix or sphagnum moss, keep it slightly moist, and it will grow like crazy.
Moist.
Yes, and now it is $15 per pot. It is 95% decrease within 3 years of the price.
Decrease. Oh, that's good.
So, price have decreased by 95%.
Well, it always happens. That always happens to new anything. It doesn't have to be just plants. Like, you know, you get a new game, let's say the game that just came out and it's like $100, but then with time the price sort of drops a bit. But I guess you can't propagate games, can you?
No, unfortunately that is called piracy.
Yeah,
but also it's kind of not comparable because it was for three leaves it's $200, whereas for $15 you can buy a pot right now. Another example was Monstera Albo.
Is it the variegated one?
It is Monstera variegated half moon. You know what is half moon?
No.
Half leaf can be like white.
Oh, so, yep. Okay, yeah. Yep.
Now, so now what is the difference? The difference between the Albo and Thai Constellation. Albo is more white, whereas Thai Constellation a bit more creamy white.
Like, okay.
You can see it on my table over there, and it is a bit more minty, and when it's a bigger chunk, it's a bit more creamy white, whereas the...
So that's Thai Constellation. Yeah. Okay.
So for the Albo, it was 300 when it was 2020 for the small plant and or a small cutting.
Excuse me, 300.
Mm-hmm. And for the Monstera Albo right now, it is 200. It was not that long ago. And the price decrease is not that significant. Like,
it's 100 buck. That's quite significant, I think.
100 buck is significant. But compared to String of Turtles, for example, it is holding it.
I remember the hype about
strings. It is holding up quite well.
Yeah. Because I remember the hype about Strings of String of Turtles.
Yeah. I think everybody wanted it.
Yeah, I wanted it as well, but then I kind of saw it because I love my chain of hats, and I found it quite similar looking to String of Turtles, even though they're different families.
String of Hearts is Cirripedia, and this one is Peperomia.
Yeah, but they kind of look similar because they're, you know, creeping plants.
Creeping plants and flat disky.
Flat disco.
Flat disk appearance of leaf.
Yeah. But then I saw it and I was like, not really worth the money that they wanted for it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And also Monstera Thai Constellation, same decrease in market price, $300 for on 2020. 2023, it is $200. And they actually started to, it is now available in box stores. It is $200 for a small plant, which is exciting for people who always wanted them. I think one of the most popular examples of the price decrease and outrageous spendings was variegated fishtail Hoya.
I haven't even seen the variegated one before.
It is now $15 per cutting. But 2020, the whole plant was sold for... Would you guess for me?
500?
Go next.
As in up?
Up.
1,000?
Up.
The if? And did people actually buy it?
I think it was $15,000 or $20,000.
Come again for the little fudge?
Yes, that. You heard me correctly. $15,000 to $20,000.
Thousands, not 1,500. 15,000s. Damn.
Yes, and now it is quite cheap. So I hope they made as much money as they could, as many cuttings as they could of that plant, because now it is not worth it.
I actually hope they didn't make the money out of it, because it seems ridiculous charging so much money for... I mean, okay, if there is demand, then obviously there is supply, so people...
And there was a crazy demand back in that time. Like, people wanted something different. People wanted to stand out. People wanted to be the first to have it.
See, like... I guess it is people's preferences. Like, I love houseplants. You saw my house. I do have quite a few of them as well. But I don't really get... half of my houseplants come from Sasha, yes. My favorite one is the massive Bird of Paradise.
Ah, Bird of Paradise, yes.
Well, it looks like a...
Shit, it's so huge.
It looks like a freaking palm, because it's like... We have a massive couch. And when you're sitting on the couch, the leaf... is right above you, because in my house we have quite high ceilings.
I just could not have it in my house anymore. My ceilings are 2.4 and it was just reaching it and scraping it.
I don't know how tall the ceiling... I don't really have a ceiling. I have pitched roofs with exposed rafters in our house. So in some rooms the ceiling, the roof is high, and in some rooms it's a little bit lower. I don't know how high the roof is in the living room where the plant is, but it started touching the roof as well. So when the new leaf appeared, I actually had to put a little piece of
string,
not a string, but also sort of wedged something in between the two stems so that the new stem
would
actually...
So you started to train it.
Yes, so the new stem would actually cascade over the staircase. Yeah, because otherwise it would just be pressing into the roof and
smart.
Probably yeah, it's probably not really good for the plant. But yeah, so I love plants because they do soften the corners in your house. But I don't really get that hype about, you know, oh, that's such a cool plant. But I guess because maybe I'm not really a collector, where I know you like collecting things.
Definitely. Like, I'm trying to declutter at the moment because I'm realizing that, okay, I just would like to dedicate my time and effort to the plants that I love and appreciate rather than having multiples of same species.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing, I guess, is when you have too many plants, they just stop
bringing as much
joy. Yeah. So hence I've decluttered recently as well. But I did keep the big plants, and most of my big plants came from Sasha anyway, so I would not give them away.
So shall we cover another outrageous price just to wrap it up?
Okay, let's
Rapida flora tetrasperma.
That's the mini
Monstera.
Yeah.
Variegated.
Ooh, that must be pretty.
What do we think about it? The article is from 14th 06 2021.
A grand?
Let's go up.
1500?
Let's go up.
2000?
Let's go up.
10?
Let's go up.
Okay, I'm just...
That will be a $27,000. And the plant was not even that.
But like... I mean, I guess plants are investment as well. But the prices are so unpredictable. They just... I mean, it's not a house. It doesn't hold its price.
It is a short-term investment. Like, I completely understand when you just have a new plant on a market or trying to import a new plant into the market to be the first to be able to sell it, you can charge as much as you want because you know that people would like that. You need to get your money back, so yes, obviously, it is. And if there is a market for it, sure, it's your business, you can do whatever you like. Just don't be like some people have been online and be like...
Greedy.
Some people were greedy and the other people were just toxic because like, oh, it's just a plant, you're charging... kidney and leg.
Well, no, see, I wouldn't judge anyone for charging what they want. I just wouldn't buy it.
Yeah, if you can't afford it, don't buy it. Don't be a toxic person as well about it. Like, obviously people went into loops and hoops to actually get that plant into the country, even like whether it was legal or illegal. If it was legal, it was even harder just because you need to submit the form for the phytocertificate for the plant,
which costs money as well.
Which costs you like thousands of dollars. And then if it's already a mature plant, you need to keep it for like 2 or 3 weeks in a quarantine, which is another $6,000. And that all adds up. And that's why it's so bloody expensive to begin with.
I didn't even think that there are quarantines for plants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, because again, plants showing the symptoms of disease, like bacterial, viral, or pests.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. How about we step out into the outdoor world? I guess I'll start with another reason why a lot of houseplants are not allowed in the country is because, like, for example, in Christchurch, we have 3 different rubbish disposals. So we have recycling, we have just general rubbish, and we have green...
General rubbish. Who have been watching How I Met Your Mother. Yep. General rubbish.
And we have green waste. So I was just thinking about it. Like, when you, I don't know, cut dead leaves off your houseplants, where do you put them? Do you put them in a green bin?
Compost.
Or do you put them in... Yeah. So I was just thinking about it, that potentially whatever is in the house could end up outside if the green waste is not disposed properly. But also... Sometimes what happens is we have bin days, so your bin will go onto the street. Let's say ours is on Tuesday morning, they collect the rubbish. So if it's a windy day, it can actually topple your bin over, and everything that was in there could just...
Go into the stormwater.
Stormwater, yeah.
Your lawn, groundwater.
Yeah, that's actually another point. People put your rubbish in bags, not the green waste, but like red rubbish. Put it in bags and tie the bags just so that...
If there is a storm, it's not all over the street.
Yes, exactly. It's not related to plants, but it's just something that irks me so much when people don't do it. But anyway, so that's how I thought that like houseplant waste could actually end up on the street and in the environment as well. Like most of the houseplants that we have here in Christchurch won't really grow outside. But then if you go to Auckland, let's say,
where Monstera is a pest.
Yeah, because it can grow outside. That could be a major problem. Fun fact, did you know that Auckland is considered to be the most weedy city in the world?
No, I didn't know that.
I randomly found it.
Why is it weedy? Like, what is the weed that is
just getting weeds, the weeds that are killing the native plants? There are a lot of them in Auckland, apparently.
Well, it is a good environment over there for any plant to grow.
Yeah.
Like, even Calatheas and Philodendrons grow there.
Yeah.
I was surprised when I was walking through central Auckland and seeing all the house plants, like indoor plants that I find in Christchurch, growing on the sides of the street.
Mm.
I'm like, interesting.
Yeah. But going back to the topic of the outdoor plants and pest plants, I guess one good example of importing plants that probably should have never been imported is gorse. Mm. Do you know how it ended up in New Zealand?
Yes, it used to be used as the hedging for the pastures.
Yeah, because it's spiky. So gorse originally comes from Europe. I think it is quite popular in Britain. People back in the day, they brought this plant to be used as hedges here in New Zealand as well. The only thing is, New Zealand has a really...
temperate?
It's temperate, but it's also quite a mild in weather and environment. So we do get winters, like here in Christchurch on the South Island, we do get
-5
winters and summers. But yeah, we rarely get snow here. And yeah, in winter, -5 is already like super cold. We don't really go
below
go below that.
Like, I've been here for 6 years and I can't remember the day that it was less than -6.
Yeah. And obviously the gorse loved it in here because it's not that cold. So it just went berserk in New Zealand and became a pest. So it started colonizing areas that were meant to be colonized by native plants and just overtook a lot of ground for it. It's just a good example of, you know,
gorse and broom.
How something was supposed to be harmless, but it's a massive problem now.
Was it in Canada? Or I can't remember where. They have imported deer into the country and it just started to overpopulate the country.
Well, I guess it's like with rabbits and...
just like rabbits here.
Yeah.
And yeah. Also, somebody have introduced stout. Stout? Stout? I can't remember how to pronounce it. Stout. Into the country. And that have damaged state of New Zealand quite badly. Like, a lot of birds got to the level of extinction, or at least like getting endangered.
Well, yeah, because they eat eggs. I'm not actually sure if they eat birds as well, but
they do eat eggs. And the thing is that New Zealand's birds have evolved not to have predators, and they have no idea how to protect themselves.
Mm.
They are so trusting. Like, when I was going out into mountains for hike, you can see like black robins sometimes.
They're so friendly, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're so friendly. And you just go there and you just sit a bit and pretend that you have food in your hand. If you have food in your hand, even better. And they will just explore and sit on your hand.
Mm. Like, fantails. I love piwaka waka. Just
piwaka waka.
Yeah, just following you if you're walking, because they love seeing you disturb the ground. So when you disturb the ground, obviously you can see more insects in there. So they just follow you to find that. So another problem that I find with like biosecurity in New Zealand, I guess it's a biosecurity issue, is let's say ivy,
mm-hmm.
which is a bitch plant
to get rid of.
That I absolutely like. Ugh, it annoys me so much just because it destroys everything that it touches. Like, if you have it, I have it growing from my neighbors. It just starts popping out behind my grapevine. And I'm like, yep. And I'm like, nope, you're not getting into my garden. But you can still buy it in New Zealand. As in, you can actually buy it in a garden center. I know that some garden centers sell it as a houseplant. But you can still plant it outside. And also, you can still buy it as an outdoor plant. It just bothers me so much, because if it's planted in the wrong place, it can overtake so much ground. It can suffocate trees, native trees.
It damages properties. It damages fences. It's really hard to get rid of as well. I have no idea how to actually kill the root of ivy so it doesn't grow back.
You can do it. You just need like a woody weed killer. I personally don't really like using
herbicides
and stuff. Yeah, sometimes you have to, but if I have a chance not to do it and to use something else to kill a weed, I'd do that. But with ivy, you just
need to go all out.
Yeah, I also was researching some of the, I went onto the Weedbusters website and I was just researching some plants that are considered to be weeds in New Zealand.
Like Tradescantia?
Tradescantia, yes. Which, again, it's sold as a house plant, but it can grow outside, especially in warmer regions of New Zealand, and then just overtakes the ground.
Even in the local area, like Christchurch, if it is
like
covered,
sheltered from frost,
then it will be growing. The prime example is by the river underneath the bridge. Like somewhere over here, I have found a place where Tradescantia just grows as a weed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it loves moist soil, doesn't it? So, yeah, it's probably perfect.
Perfect conditions.
Perfect conditions for it, yeah.
No direct sun as well, so it doesn't burn. So it just goes crazy.
Funny enough, we've talked about nasturtium in our last episode, and it is on the list, weedbuster list.
Well, I would call it a weed.
It is a weed, yeah, but I don't know. I like it. But I do have it growing in the garden where nothing else is growing. To be precise, that garden, it's not even the garden, it's just like an area behind my house where I have literally weed mat and stones on top of it, and nasturtium is growing in the stones. I don't know how, I don't know why, but it's growing there. So
I'm like, I don't know how, but I know nasturtium is growing right now.
Yeah. And another plant is that kind of, I don't know, raised my attention, I guess, is jasmine.
I understand why, but which one?
not Chinese star jasmine. Because Chinese.
Do you think like Trachospermum
or
Polyanthem?
No, Chinese star jasmine is a little bit slower growing. No, the actual jasminum. So Trachospermum is the Chinese star jasmine, Trachospermum jasminoides, which is, I guess it can become invasive as well if you let it go, but it's a little bit slower growing than your typical jasmine. It's
definitely much slower growing.
Yeah.
What about Polyanthem?
Pretty.
It's a local one. Local jasmine.
No, it's not New Zealand. No.
Australia?
No idea, sorry. But yeah, to be honest, a lot of climbers can become invasive, so you kind of need to make sure that you plant them in the right spot. Yeah, but I have witnessed myself a jasmine, like a proper jasmine, suffocating a cabbage tree, which are very difficult to kill. Cabbage tree is a native plant, Cordyline australis, and I have witnessed jasmine just suffocating that. And I was like, damn, I mean, it smells nice, but you have that alternative of using Chinese star jasmine instead of just jasmine. So,
which is a bit easier to control.
It is a bit easier to control. It's also evergreen.
All the benefits. It's evergreen, smells nice, and grows slowly.
Yeah. And another plant that, let's say, we use in landscape architecture quite a bit is Agapanthus. Agapanthus is on the list of, on the Weedbuster list. Recently, I've actually seen this really cool thing that they're doing at Hagley Park. I don't know if you've noticed it. It's not that far from the cafe. They have done like a trial of different Agapanthus species in the garden to see which ones, not propagate, spread, and
spread
which ones
faster.
Don't. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so I found it really cool because Agapanthus are very easy to grow. I'm personally not a big fan of them, but like it's a good shady plant for a shady area.
I'm not a fan of Agapanthus as well, just because I know that it spreads like a wildfire. The prime example is Birdlings Flat. And what they should have done in the Botanic Garden, if they wanted to do this kind of event, they should have established a race course with like, here is the track for one Agapanthus, there's another track for another Agapanthus, and which one will go further?
Well, if only you could control the direction where the seeds would go.
You can just put the walls. And yeah. Because it's not the seeds that are the problem, essentially. It is a bulb, and it just literally, it just keeps on rolling over and
it
over.
It actually does both. It spreads through tubers, and it spreads through seeds as well. It depends. The miniature Agapanthus are not as invasive.
Like Peter Pan?
Yeah, like Peter Pan and Streamline as well. They're not as invasive as you know, traditional gapentas, call it that way. I don't like that they turn kind of stalky and they just go a bit woody if you don't trim them every year. Bigger gapentas.
Mm.
Yeah. It's just good to see that there are trials like that, because obviously, like, you know, taking a plant that people like out of their environment is not as great, but actually finding an alternative of that plant that is less invasive is good. So on that note, there was another article that I saw recently, again, about Hagley Park as well, where they've done a trial with the wildflowers. Have you seen that?
No.
No?
But you will tell me all about it, hopefully.
Yeah, so I think I've spoken to you about it before. I hate lawn.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, I have lawn in my house just because we haven't really finished planning what we want to do in our garden.
I mean, the amount of money and effort and time and everything...
I see why.
That
I mean,
you need to waste.
There is
on
nothing
it.
Wrong about having the lawn. The reason why I don't like it is, and people who love their lawn, please don't take it as an offense. Like, I'm just, it's my personal point of view and it's my experience with lawns. I'm not saying that if you love your green lush lawn, that it's bad. If you
if
like
anything,
it,
I'm
you
just
do
jealous
you.
That you can maintain it, because I can't. I have a female dog who just burns my fucking lawn.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm not trying to attack anyone. This is my personal opinion on lawn. Lawn is a monoculture, right? So you don't get a lot of critters and insects living in your lawn. It's just usually, you know, just lawn
grub.
Which
is a good
or...
thing for people who don't like insects, I would say. Like, if you're allergic to bees, you don't want pollinators as well.
In your personal, in your house, yes. But what I don't get is when in massive parks, they have massive areas of lawn that are just dedicated
doing
to
nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, like I understand if you have a field for like
you
rugby
can have
or
a picnic.
Something like that. Or well, you don't need to have a massive picnic area, and you can also have areas where you can have small bits of lawn with plants around it. Yeah. So what they've done in Hagley Park, they did like a trial of wildflowers, and they've seeded wildflowers. I can't remember the size of the project, but they've seeded wildflowers in the area where the lawn was supposed to be. And apparently it was quite a big success, which is interesting because most of the wildflowers are not New Zealand natives, but they are pollen rich. And that's another topic, I guess, not topic, but another point, that in New Zealand, we have both native and non-native insects that help pollinate both native and non-native plants. So even though we want more natives, we still need to plant exotics as well, just because... No, there are quite a few of them that are pollinated by bees. Did you know that New Zealand has more than 20 species of native bees? Yeah, yeah. We'll get to it one day, because I actually would like to discuss New Zealand insects and what they are attracted to plant-wise in one of the topics.
Insects, yuck.
I like insects. I have recently found a stick insect in our garden, and I was quite excited about it because apparently they are quite rare in the cities.
Okay, we can talk about insects, and I will bring my story from the university when I was shown the experiment of beheaded bees. Let's keep it at that.
We'll talk about it later. So yeah, that project with wildflowers instead of lawn, they've done it for a season, and then at the end of the season, the flowers were just mowed over. I like that idea, and because the project was so successful, they're actually thinking of implementing it in other parks as well. The only thing that I found interesting is they did say that people will have to get used to the fact that the ground will look nothing, no lawn, no grass, nothing for a couple of months in winter. Which I don't find a problem with, but I guess some people will be like, oh, you know, it's a muddy patch. Why won't you plant anything in it, or why won't you lawn it? It saves you, A, the maintenance, right? Because
you
don't...
You still can plant clover over it, probably.
Clover. That's a massive weed in New Zealand.
I know, but I remind you, the thing is that it is nitrogen fixating.
Yes, it wouldn't do it.
And yes, there is a big problem with nitrates and water, but nitrogen is important. Nitrogen that is fixed by clover is available for plants to pick up. It's a different variety of nitrogen that is a problem in our groundwaters. And it just makes the soil a bit more fertile.
I still wouldn't plant clover over it. What I was trying to say is, with lawn, right, you have to maintain it You have to mow it, I don't know how many times in summer.
Fertilize it, seed it.
You use the pesticides and insecticides if you have problems with it to keep it nice and tidy. The problem with pesticides and insecticides, they do have chemicals that could be very poisonous to marine and aquatic life.
And to bees.
And to bees as well. Yeah, so you wouldn't want to use that. And if you just use wildflowers, that kind of fixes that problem. The only trouble is you can't use wildflowers next to waterways, just because that way it can spread to the areas where you don't want your wildflowers to grow. I found it really interesting. It's just kind of wrapping up the whole invasive species, non-native species, and the biosecurity, that there are ways to actually make it work, I guess. You can still have exotic species and not harm the environment of New Zealand. It's just research is needed and education is needed.
Well, let's just call it informed decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything to add to it?
I honestly am all out of topics to talk about. I can talk more about wine if you want to.
Anyway, how's your wine? Are you enjoying the wine from Hawke's Bay?
Honestly, it is great.
Okay, I'm drinking cider, but I actually want to try some of your wine. Would you mind passing me your glass?
What is great about the Hawke's Bay is that...
Ooh!
Ooh, yes, exactly.
It smells... Mmm.
I mean, that one is also opened up a bit.
I like sort of medium to full-bodied wines.
Oh, this one is going to be a full...
It's not full, but it's kind of like a medium to full body. You know what I mean? Like, it's... I like smelling it.
She is the fan of Merlot's, full-bodied, or like very chewy Syrahs.
Mm. Speaking of graphite, damn, it's not the taste of it, but it's the texture, like the
chalkiness.
Yeah. Wow. I guess it tastes a bit different after my sweet cider as well.
Yeah, but also Hawke's Bay, it is North Island. It is hotter climate, which means the grapes going to generate more sugars. More sugars mean more alcohol and more flavor for the wine.
Nice. Good choice.
That's why if you want something a bit more delicate, something a bit more floral and pretty, as people say about the wine that is more light, you go somewhere with a colder climate where the season is short.
Mm. Waipara Valley. So, in the next episode, I think what we're going to do is bust some myths about plants and also talk about plants and the myths.
Yeah. Mythology within the plants.
Yeah. Because, I find it
the
quite interesting.
The mythology. Anyways.
Plantology, mythology. Yeah. So that's a wrap on Two Tipsy Plants podcast today. Thank you for getting tipsy with us today and joining in on our plant-loving shenanigans. We definitely do talk shenanigans quite a bit, I think. We hope we've inspired you to grab a glass of wine or whatever poison of choice you have and give your leafy friends some extra love. If you would like to help our podcast, feel free to follow us so you don't miss out on the next wild and tipsy adventure. Keep it green.
And give it tipsy. Ooh, yeah. Do-do-do-do-do. Outro.